And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Andy Webb with Lifestyles Unlimited, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. And I thank you for tuning in today. Great topic today. We're going to talk about communication in the real estate investing world. There are a lot of different angles here, maybe some things you haven't thought about. And I've got a number of very specific topics. A few of these have come up just in the past few weeks. And I always say to myself, if this person is thinking about it, I'm sure a lot of people out there are as well. It's on your mind. So we're going to work through a number of these today. For example, somebody asked about communications with residents. And here on the show and what we do at Lifestyles Unlimited, we focus just on investing in single family houses and in apartments. And in this case, this was a single family investor, newer investor, and said, hey, should I give the resident my personal phone number and email? Well, we're going to talk about that. Another question came up recently. Can I talk to the appraiser? Right? If you understand our process, I'll describe that a little bit so you know where this fits in. And, you know, appraisers out there to do an appraisal on my property after I've completed my renovations, I'm going to do a refinance. Can I go out and talk to them? Well, this came up in a recent conversation as well. And another one, very common question, how often should I be, quote, communicating with my general contractor? I'll turn this back on you and ask the question, well, what are your expectations here? Are they realistic? So those are the three for sure we'll hit. If we have time, I've got some others queued up as well. And how do you communicate with me? Look, this is not a one-way road. Yeah, I'm talking to you over the radio or maybe through a podcast app, but you can reach out by email. You can send me your questions to askandy@luinc.com. Again, askandy@luinc.com. And I'm going to approach the discussion today from the property timeline perspective. What do I mean? Well, we're looking for a rental property, and I'm going to focus heavily for those that are investing in single family houses. Of course, what we talk about today may apply to you if you're buying your own multifamily or investing or doing a syndication around apartments. But I want to frame this from the perspective of that timeline. And what is our general model at Lifestyles Unlimited? It helps if you understand that. And this model applies whether we're talking single family or apartments. What we're seeking to do is go out and buy a distressed asset, right? Something that maybe is financially distressed or physically distressed. Often it's both. And we're going to reposition that thing. So if it's a single family house, reposition simply means go in and do the necessary renovations. If it's multifamily, that may be rehab, that may be renovations, physical distress, or it may just mean going in and improving operations on an otherwise great asset. This does happen. But ultimately, we're going to reposition it. We're going to drive up value, right? We're going to drive up equity. We're going to collect cash flow, gain that equity, and then sell for a big profit, right? That's the goal. And some concepts that you'll need that derive from that those ideas and will inform part of our discussion here in a minute is, well, for one thing, how do we make money on our houses? Let's talk about that. We make money five ways. There's the cash flow. This is a rental property. I'm going to collect the gross rents, pay my expenses out of those rents, and have a net cash flow at the end of the day that is my profit that I keep. We make money that way. Cash flow, very important. Has to cash flow. And then because we are buying distressed assets and fixing them up, adding value, we have equity capture. That happens at the very outset. When I buy a house for $100,000, put $50,000 of work into it, and now the value is $200,000, right? There's a $50,000 gap there. Net out of, you know, some closing costs, and we've got our equity capture there. That can be a really large number on houses and certainly on apartments. And as I mentioned, we're going to talk to an appraiser. That implies a mortgage. So we will have financing in place. And by virtue of the fact that my resident makes a rent payment to me every month, and out of that I pay the mortgage, I have something called equity buildup every month. In the background, my principal balance goes down and my equity goes up. It's a very quiet way. And you'll be surprised at the end of your hold period just how much equity has built up thanks to your residence. Of course, we have market appreciation that happens naturally, and there are tax advantages. So we're going to play with some of those ideas as we go through our discussion today. Another key concept for you is the notion of best product, best price. So this is a distressed asset. I want to go out and do the renovations. I want to make it shine. And by virtue of fixing everything that is broken now or could break, could break in the next handful of years, right? I'm applying that idea of best product. What I'm doing is pulling maintenance and CapEx, capital expenditures. Those are your bigger ticket one-off things like replacing the AC or the roof if it needs it, etc. We pull that forward to now so that we're not having to deal with it here and there over the hold period. That makes your hold period easier. So perhaps communication with those very residents is just minimized altogether. That's a great thing. And it protects our cash flow, right? I pulled it forward, is essentially rolled into that loan, into that financing. And with houses, speaking of financing, we do buy with hard money because these need work. Typically cannot get a straight conventional loan. Fannie Mae that insures loans, residential loans, does not want to insure something where the windows are broken, the roof is gone, right? The foundation is out of whack. Even if the carpet's missing in one of the bedrooms, doesn't want to insure it. So we're going to buy with hard money. It's a construction loan. We're going to do those renovations, and then we'll refinance into that long-term fixed-rate debt. Typically Fannie Mae financing, if we can get that. There are other options out there. But as part of that process, we will be engaging appraisers two different times, one for the hard money loan, one for the refinance. Okay, so those are broadly the processes, the concepts, the things that we're going to talk about as we become real estate investors. And I'll tell you, it when it comes to any kind of communication, it helps to know the process. And it's also very important to be organized so that you know what to communicate and when with each party that is part of that process. So, for example, I'm looking at a house in Georgia. I'm in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, by the way. Got a great lead from one of the Lifestyles Realty team over there. When do I start talking to my lender about this property? When do I engage an insurance broker? When do I start to get quotes from general contractors? Right? When do I start to communicate to the general public that this awesome rental product is about to hit the market? Right, those are all parts of the process. So you need to understand where those fit in, but you also need to be organized. I will confess, over the years, I've been very bad about getting my insurance quotes. I don't know why. I just dropped that as part of the process. Today, though, I did it right. And literally, this was today. I emailed the insurance broker, got this hot lead. And unfortunately, his quote came back way, way higher than my plug. Way, way higher than what I thought it would be. I'm not as experienced in Georgia to know. Here in Dallas-Fort Worth, no problem. I know what I'm going to be going in at. But so good to know. Does that kill the investment opportunity or not? We'll go back and run the numbers after the show. Literally just got this in. But you got to have a checklist. And you need to be organized so you're doing these things in a timely manner. If I had missed this and not gotten that quote until closer to closing, that could scuttle the cash flow for me, right? So timely checklist or checklist for timely communication is important. It's also good to know, by the way, at the start of the process, right? We're targeting distressed properties. I want to be able to communicate with those, let's say, sources of property, people that can bring me that distressed lead. That might be realtors. That might be wholesalers. That might be other investors. In fact, it should be all three of those. You should be networking and connecting with each and every one of those. But you need to be able to communicate efficiently, effectively, what it is that you're looking for. Can you communicate this in a short and easy to remember way? You know, think about that elevator pitch. Usually, if I'm thinking about single family houses, what am I telling people? I want to tell that they want to know what kind of box I'm looking to buy. They want to know what kind of rehab, right, I want to deal with. What are my target numbers? Thinking about the box, right, the house, what is the age of the box that I'm targeting? Location of the box, the layout of the box. You know, I might say to a wholesaler or to a realtor, hey, I'm looking for a 1950s build and newer in and around Dallas-Fort Worth, single story, don't want double, two story, between 1,000 and 2,000 square feet. I prefer three bed, two bath, two car garage, but if it's got a garage conversion, that's okay, half bath, right? This is just an example, by the way. But have that ready to go. That's just one sentence. Bam, 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 bam. Rehab level. Hey, I'm comfortable with any level of rehab. Don't want fire damage. Maybe that's an example. Or, hey, I'm only looking for cosmetic repairs. Right? Very concise. Target numbers. Hey, Mr. Wholesaler, I do not want to be more than $30,000 out of pocket. I need a 100% equity gain. My cash flow needs to be 200 or greater with at least an 8% cash on cash return. If you do the math, the annualized cash flow divided by the cash out of pocket, get you to that 8%, by the way, as a minimum. Now, typically a wholesaler, they're not going to get into that level of numbers. I very commonly get the question from a wholesaler, what's your minimum price, right? Or what's your maximum price? The discussion really doesn't work like that. It all goes back to things like repairs, etc. I will more commonly use that kind of verbiage, you know, a minimum out of pocket or maximum out of pocket, 100% equity gain, etc. when I speak with the Lifestyles Realty team, like the realtor in Georgia. He knows what I'm looking for. Same goes for multifamily. You know, I sat in just recently on a mastermind session for aspiring leads and IROs. Let me define those. A lead at Lifestyles Unlimited is that person, that project manager, let's say, that goes out and finds an apartment investment, figures it all out, makes the business plan, and then they syndicate it. They allow me as a passive investor to participate. An aspiring lead is someone that has not yet done that, but they're on track to do that. IRO, that's independent rental owner. That's an acronym. That's somebody that, instead of syndicating, they're just going to buy that on their own. So at this mastermind session, the Lifestyles Realty was present as well. And the multifamily mentor that was steering the whole conversation asked a simple question to each and every one of us. Tell us about your box. What is it you want? Hey, 1980s or newer, pitched roof, no chillers, no boilers, garden style, right? 20 to 30 units in and around Dallas, Fort Worth, and in Tennessee. Purchase price up to fill in the blank. This was one of the replies from one of the participants there. He knew his numbers. He had his elevator pitch ready. And I can tell you, the Lifestyles Realty team, they're there in the background taking notes. So have that information ready. You're communicating already at this point, concisely, ideally. You need to know what you're looking for, of course. Now, let's say you do find that house. You get that box, that 3-bed, 2-bath, 2-car garage, 1950s build, that's going to need some renovations. Well, let's bring in the general contractor, because we don't want you out there doing the work yourself. You're going to hire this out. We teach you how to hire it out. We teach you how to write checks. We want this to be as passive an investment as possible. So you're going to engage somebody to do the work for you, and that's a general contractor typically. So let's talk about communicating with those general contractors. And before I say anything else here, I'm going to underscore this. Let me say this very clearly. Get it all in writing. Get it in writing. If you have a conversation with that GC and he tells you this and that over the phone, and you get to the project and nobody remembers what you discussed, that could be a problem. So get it in writing. Very important. And at the start of the project, and here you're just, like I am, looking at this investment in Georgia, you're just getting quotes. And we teach you to go out and get 3 quotes. You want to get 3 general contractors out there, and ideally, again, thinking about communication, you put together your own rough scope of work and provide that to each of those GCs. If you don't do that, you're going to get apples, oranges, and pomegranates back in return. Now you got to figure out, you know, which is the best. Give them your scope of work. You got to learn how to do that, by the way. And then you'll have apples and apples bids to compare and contrast when you get those back. Helps to get an inspection as part of your due diligence, by the way. And then fine-tune that scope of work. Now, whether that's after you get your GC bids or before, you know, I typically get a rough idea from my GC before going under contract and before getting those inspections. But even before that point, we need to figure out, is this the GC? Is this the general contractor for me? And when I think about communication, and I've dealt with various general contractors over the years, I have my preferred ones. They communicate great. I have those that, it's like pulling teeth sometimes. I want to know ahead of time how they communicate. Will they keep me updated, let's say, on a weekly call or per email, or do they use some sort of portal, right? I have one GC that does that very thing. I can log in and check and see the notes and see the pictures and see everything there. How do I know? Talk to references. Here, going back to Georgia, looking at a target area, I started talking with Lifestyles members. Have you worked with this GC? Have you worked with this one? How was the communication? This is hugely important. If you don't clarify this now, you're going to have frustration later because your expectations lie here. And this is simply how that GC operates, right? So if you expect an update every other day, ask those prior clients, how do they perform? How timely are they? Were you happy with their communication? What did that look like? All right, quick break. We'll be right back.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
Learn to retire in 5 years or less through real estate investing. Learn how, learn now. Let Lifestyles Unlimited show you how. Get educated now. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297. Lifestyles Unlimited.
Creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Andy Webb. I thank you for tuning in today. If you have questions, send those over to me at askandy@luinc.com. I love communicating with you. I like hearing your questions. And that's what we're talking about today is communication. We've been talking about that general contractor because we are out looking for distressed properties. That implies that we need to repair those, and we don't want you out there doing the work. takes too long, quality maybe suffers, sorry. General contractor is going to do it right, get it done quickly, ideally. And they are really your big partner at this part of the process during the renovations, and you need to be able to stay close with them, so to speak. Not physically, but you need to keep them informed. Once you finally pick that GC, that general contractor, gotten through the due diligence, now you're heading towards the closing table. This is very important. This is where you really need to keep them informed. If you got a quote from them a month ago at the start of the process, and now you're closing today, and you let that general contractor know today, hey, I just closed, do you think they're going to have somebody ready to get out there and get on those repairs? Probably not. We want to get on those as quickly as possible, so keep them apprised of that closing date well ahead of time. Well ahead of time. Now, we're closed, right? We've closed on the property. They're out there doing work. During the renovations, during the rehab, ask for those updates if you're not receiving those. Now, don't overdo it. Is it a daily thing? No. No, talk with other investors if you are new to this. What's reasonable to expect from my general contractor? How much work do they have? If this is a big GC that has a lot of projects, is this a one-time, you know, small GC that's doing one or two here and there, right? It's going to vary. It's going to vary, but don't overdo it. But I think it's reasonable at a minimum weekly to get some kind of update. That might be pictures and video. I do want to see pictures and video, especially if you're investing remotely, like Georgia. I can't drive out there and look at the property. If it's local, I will do that. I like to do that. By the way, as part of the process, because you are buying with hard money, and your hard money lender will hold back the repair dollars until those repairs are done. And when you tell that hard money lender, hey, we fixed the foundation, new roof is on, we got the windows in, can you send me, let's say, $15,000 out of that repair escrow? Before they do that, they're going to send an inspector out to verify that the work was done and done well. You get an extra set of eyes on the property. That's great. You should be able to get some pictures and whatnot from that as well, just as an aside. But what happens if during the process something changes? Right? Again, here, I want to know quickly. And typically, if it's some kind of a what's called a change order, that GC will reach out to you, and they will reach out to you in writing and have you sign something that says, hey, we got to do this extra work, here's the cost, etc. It may be due to, you know, changes in timeline could be due to several things. It could be, you know, permitting from the city, inspectors taking a long time to get out there, maybe delays. I've had this happen, delays in the delivery of appliances. Think back to COVID when there were shortages. Yeah, that happened. That happened. But again, it could be a change order. For example, I don't know, maybe they're opening up the sheetrock to do the plumbing rough in and they discover that there's some issues with the, you know, a few of the studs behind the sheetrock. Now we need to take all the sheetrock down, go in and replace those, etc. That's going to affect the timeline. I need to know that. What's the added cost? That's a change order. We want to avoid those as much as we can, but sometimes, you know, sometimes they happen. So understanding that, understanding how the renovation process is going, right? Very, very important. You want to make sure things are moving along the timeline, right? We want to stick to that timeline as closely as we can. And it's very important to know because how that renovation process is concluding, right, getting to the end, affects one of the next big steps in the process, and that is getting our appraisal for our refinance. We don't sit in hard money. That is a short-term construction loan, high interest. So we want to get in and out of that as quickly as we can. And the way we get out is by refinancing into long-term debt. Right? Even though we're going to just hold this property for 2, 3, 4 years, we're going to go get a 30-year fixed-rate loan. And those lenders, before they lend to me, they want to know, okay, you fixed it up, great. What is now the value of the property? By the way, before I order that appraisal, I want to be sure we're steering towards the conclusion of that, of those renovations. Now, that begs the next question. This was a conversation we had as well. Can I go out and talk to that vaunted appraiser? Ooh, is that okay? Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I do it every time. Now, generally, I don't interface with the hard money appraiser. Don't really care at that point. In fact, I want their full, unbiased, unswayed opinion of the value of that property before I take on that project. But when it comes to the refinance appraisal, yeah, I want to work some magic here. I want to work some magic here. Well, how do you do that and why do you do that? Well, the why, well, simply put, I don't want their value to come in lower than my hard money appraisal. My initial loan, 75% of that hard money appraisal, right, that was based off of that value. If it comes in lower, and I can get a 75% loan-to-value 30-year note, right, as a result of that appraisal, that work I've done. If that value comes in lower, I'm going to bring cash to close. I'm going to bring more cash to the table because I won't get as much of a loan as I had planned, right? In fact, I want it to come in higher, if possible, because the opposite effect occurs. I reduce my cash to close. I reduce my cash out of pocket. I can now go out and do another investment sooner than planned. So how do I do that? How do I work my magic? How do I help in this situation? Well, if it's local, again, I'm in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I've got houses all over the Metroplex, some close, some far. You know, I just plan to go out and meet the appraiser. I do this every time. I meet the appraiser, and I take a packet of information for them, and here's what's in that packet. I take that hard money appraisal. Yeah, I show them what it appraised for 2, 3, 4 months ago when I initially applied for hard money. That kind of sets the minimum value, hopefully, in the minds of that refi appraiser. I'm going to bring my latest updated comps because things can change in a handful of months since that original appraiser. If they work in my favor, right? If they don't, maybe leave those behind. I'm going to bring my scope of work, just kind of upper level. You know, hey, all new carpet in the bedrooms, frise if it's a nicer carpet, brush nickel fixtures and everywhere, you know, I'm drawing a blank here, you know, foundation repaired, roof repaired, roof new HVAC. Those things don't necessarily add value, but they want to see that those things have been corrected. Laminate or vinyl plank, flooring, whatever anything you've done, you know, just a quick highlight of that so that when they go back to their desk, they don't forget these things, right? Just an overview. But more importantly, most importantly, I bring my target number and I bring it as a range. So if let's say my hard money appraisal was $200,000. Now, if I think comps are coming in a bit higher now, and I have evidence to support that, and in fact, maybe I think 210 is a better number now. Well, I'm going to give my packet of information. Usually, you know, appraiser will then ask me they may or may not look through that, I don't know, but they usually ask me at that point, what value do I have in mind? And this is where I say, well, you know, I think it's somewhere around $210,000 to maybe $220,000. If my target is 210, I'm going to set that as my minimum there. Maybe you even go higher, 215 to 225. And I'll tell you, this almost always works. Ask for what you want. If they see it is reasonable, they're probably going to do it. You know, I've had a few that have ignored me, didn't care, didn't want to talk to me at all, one or two over the years. But most have been very, very receptive, and I've gotten what I asked for. So instead of 200, now we're at 210, 215. Sometimes they come in at the top of that range. Lower out-of-pocket, lower cash to close on that refinance. Now, that's in DFW. How do you do this if you're investing remotely? I had this conversation, actually, recently with some members of a group I'm in that are investing in Kansas and Missouri. Well, maybe you send a representative, maybe that very GC that did the work, or your realtor. Or, as one savvy investor did, he just called and talked through the project with the appraiser, and he got an instant $10,000 equity bump. Less cash out-of-pocket, more money to go on and do the next investment. It's great. You know, so there's a lot of moving parts that go into the timeline around buying, really sourcing, and then buying, closing, renovating, refinancing, leasing, and then managing a property. You're talking to a lot of people, right? I self-manage, so I'm very close to this process. You can always hire this out, by the way. You can always put a property manager into place for this next section that we're going to talk about, which is, well, you got it rented. You've got residents in place. How do you handle the communication with those residents? I know a lot of people that work full-time jobs and have single-family houses say, I'm not going to deal with this. It's not as much to deal with as you might think, but they'll hire a property manager. Let them handle the communication. Easy peasy. Now you just have that one-off source to go to for your 10 houses or whatever it may be. But generally speaking, communication with residents in a lot of people's heads, it's a big one and one that scares a lot of people. They think to themselves, I don't want that midnight call about a leaky toilet. I don't want those phone calls. Well, first, go back to the process that we talked about at the start of the show and our motto, best product, best price. If you go into that house during the renovation phase when it's vacant and fix everything up front that is broken now or could break in the next handful of years while you're holding this thing, while that resident is in place, then that problem goes away. This is what we do. This is what I've done on all my houses. That's why I love those houses that need work, because I go in and I fix these things. And I've never had that happen. In over a dozen years, I've never had that phone call at midnight. But that does beg the question. This was the question. This is a newer investor that asked. I believe this was her first house. In fact, single family house. She said, hey, do I give him my personal phone number? Do I give him my personal email? What should I do here? And this is stuff I've learned from Lifestyles Unlimited as a member over a dozen years now, very early on, in fact. And, you know, Google has some great tools for this. I'm sure there are other providers out there, but it's very easy to go out and create a separate Gmail account that's dedicated to your property business, your rental business. And with that Gmail account, you can get an affiliated Google Voice phone number. So you don't have to use your own. This will port to your cell phone, of course. In fact, I can get Google Voice phone calls and send texts from my laptop. And that's a cool thing. That Google Voice number takes, it's just like a cell number. It takes both calls and texts, goes to your phone. And when it does, you immediately know that it's from a resident, right? When you pick up anyhow, it says, hey, this call, they have to tell who's calling, etc. So you know. This is related to my rental business. Until the spammers get it, yeah, they're going to get it. But you need to determine. Think about these things up front. And know you don't need to use your personal information. And know you shouldn't. But know what your process will be up front. And have that number ready to go. I talked with somebody recently that wrote up a lease. They were planning on getting that Google Voice number. Hadn't done it yet. So they wrote their personal number into the lease. Well, there you have a problem. Okay, yeah, sure, you gave them that Google Voice number after the fact, but I will guarantee you that lease is there. They're going to find that number again and use it. So know your process up front, how you're going to manage this, and have that stuff ready to go. But also know your process so that you can set expectations when that new resident moves in. And just like with the general contractor and really most things in real estate, everything needs to be in writing. Simply put, your policy should be all maintenance requests must be in writing. Put that into your lease. In fact, I've got the lease that the Texas Association of Realtors uses here open in front of me. Paragraph 18, repairs. And this references Texas State Property Code. It gives the subchapter, the chapter, blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to quickly read this. It says repair requests. All requests for repairs must be in writing. There it is. And delivered to landlord. If they say tenant, we say resident. If tenant is delinquent in rent at the time a repair notice is given. Interesting. Landlord is not obligated to make the repair. This is Texas State Property Code. If you're buying in Georgia, if you're buying in Kansas, if you're buying in Missouri, acquaint yourself with their property code if that exists there and see what that says. In the event, okay, hold on. All maintenance requests must be in writing. However, in the event of an emergency related to the condition of the property, right, that materially affects the physical health or safety, then they can call, right? This is all dictated here in Texas by the Texas State Property Code, right? Going back to all repair requests, all maintenance requests must be in writing, right? You want that in your lease if you're not using this particular lease. Now, writing for me means used to mean an email. Some residents of mine seem to think that means a text. I like to dissuade that. It's a little more invasive. Or nowadays, for me, it's a management portal. And there are a ton of management portals out there. So email or some sort of management portal I would encourage you to use to get these requests in writing. There are a number of reasons why you want to do that. If nothing else, you want to have just a track, a history of the events at that property, right? But it'll ease your life because you don't want calls. If that's your fear, well, don't let it be a fear. Right here, it's even written into the Texas State Code, needs to be in writing. Now, back to those emergencies, and I have these conversations when I move my residents in. I say, and I use this phrase, fire, flood, or blood. Those are the words I use at move-in to underscore when they should call. Oh, and by the way, do not call me first. 911, and then when things have settled down, give me a call, okay? This can take some training, by the way. You know, it's interesting, even here on the in the Texas Association of Realtors lease, paragraph A, where it has the repair request and says that those must be in writing. The last sentence there, get this, it says, ordinarily, a repair to the heating and air conditioning system is not an emergency. That is a hard one to get across to people sometimes. Yeah, it's 105 degrees out and the AC's not cooling quite right. They're calling. Well, you have to be disciplined and you have to encourage them and require them to go put that in the portal, make the maintenance request. I will take that to heart and start working on it, of course, but I need it in writing. Do it. I have these conversations or have had these conversations in the past. I think most people are where I need them to be at this point. Even if it's a minor request, sometimes that happens. Send them back to your described process, enter it into the portal, send an email, whatever it is. Again, you want these things in writing. So you have a history, and just to make your life easier. So communication with residents, it shouldn't be a scary thing. Texas State Property Code helps you. Your lease will help you. Our education will help you, by the way. So how to communicate, right? We've talked a little bit about some of the big ticket items you'll be having conversations around, the renovations, the appraisals, right, maintenance. But you need to know the processes. You need to know the parties that you're engaging along your full timeline as you hold this rental property. We're sourcing it, we're finding it. That's communicating with realtors and wholesalers. That's communicating already with GCs and insurance brokers. We're renovating it. Well, it's squarely GC for the most part, right? We're going to start marketing it. That's communicating with the public. Now we're going to hold it. We've got that resident in place. It's kind of a bilateral exchange now in writing, right? At some point, you're gonna sell the property, right? More communication with those realtors, et cetera. We teach you the processes. You want to know the processes and the parties to engage along that timeline. We teach you that. You want to know the lingo. Earlier, I used the term IRA. What is that? You want to know the lingo and you want to know the equations, right? Cash on cash returns, so that you can communicate effectively. What is ARV? What is equity capture? What is economic vacancy if you're thinking about apartments? What are RUBS? The list goes on. We teach you that. And you want to know when to reach out for help. That is communication as well. And our mentors, and in fact, your fellow investors are there for you. But sometimes it's hard to ask for help. Sometimes it's hard to communicate the problem, right? But we teach you that as well. And it's okay to get help when you need it. You know, the education, I've been a member at Lifestyles Unlimited over a dozen years now. I've been doing this 12 years plus. And the education and mentorship at Lifestyles Unlimited has gone a long way to helping me achieve my success. And it will go a long way to helping you do the same. Again, 30 plus years in the business as an education and mentoring group, teaching thousands upon thousands of members to go out and buy that first single family house, buy that first apartment as a syndicator, as a lead, invest in that first apartment as a passive investor, right? Teaching all the steps that go into that and teaching good, effective communication as well. It's just part of the picture, right? It's just part of the picture, but education is that foundation upon which you then build and establish those processes and go out and do the things we talk about, achieve that financial freedom, become real estate retired. That's why all this matters. Yeah, there's a lot of talking. There's a lot of communication that goes on. Believe me, I've experienced this over the years on every single house, on every passive investment I've gone into. There's a lot of communication there too at the outset, you know, as a passive apartment investor, becomes a little quieter after a while. But it all matters because we're building towards your financial freedom. We want you to meet and exceed your monthly expenses so you don't have to work anymore. So that when the economy is a little questionable, you're feeling comfortable. You're sitting pretty, right? Those are the things we talk about at Lifestyles Unlimited. And again, on the notion of communication, if you do have questions, be sure to send those my way to askandy@luinc.com. I do answer those personally. That is Andy in the background. So I'm happy to see what you've got on your mind. And hey, maybe we work those into a future show. I'm always looking for ideas. So be sure to communicate with me. I'm happy to communicate with you today. Remember though, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. You have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at lifestylesunlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.